truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're not going to have real reform without some kind of a public option. That's pretty clear.
You know, there were some protesters across the street shouting things like...
Interesting public perception says that the stimulus plan is not working.
I think it's a good thing because a lot of kids don't have that experience.
It's not cool. It's not funny.
Get off me.
All right, world famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, wait a minute. Just wait just a ding, dang minute here. What were you saying there? It is...
It's not cool. It's not funny.
No, Phil, get off me.
That's what I thought she said. Anyway, the Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's the only news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. It's the only place where truth is, in fact, our bitch. I'm going to tell you something this quarter hour as we launch into the final hour of our show, and our number is 877-876-PHIL. There seems to be one thing that's become very clear after this weekend, after the president said that health care, the public option, that is the third rail of this three-rail approach, which is the private insurance, the public exchange or brokerage, and then the national plan, that they are committed to a national plan, but that they are open to suggestions, one of which is a co-op. Now, I'll tell you what a co-op is, and then I'm going to tell you what I think, and then you can tell me what you think, and then we'll all just ponder it. And then all of our pondering will come to a it'll reach a conclusion. I'll tell you what that conclusion is. Liberals, it says here, complain over perceived Obama concession, and I don't really give a sweet you-know-what whether it's the liberals or conservatives. It's the people that support a national option in this health care plan package. Okay, and I would be one of those people. President Barack Obama's perceived weekend concession on a health care government option drew complaints from liberals and other critics on Monday, a fresh sign of the daunting challenge in finding middle ground in an increasingly partisan political struggle. The White House insisted there had been no shift in position, adding the president still favors a federal option for the sale of health insurance. Quote, the bottom line is this, nothing has changed, said a memo containing suggested answers for administration allies to use if asked about the issue, but some supporters of health care overhaul sounded less than reassured. Obama and his top aides signaled a perceived retreat over the weekend on proposals for a provision under which consumers could choose from health insurance policies sold by the federal government as well as those marketed by private companies. All I'm saying is, though, that the public option, whether we have it or we don't have it, is not the entirety of health care reform, the president told a town hall-style audience in Grand Junction, Colorado, on Saturday. This is just one sliver of it, one aspect of it. The government option has emerged as one of the most contentious elements of legislation taking shape in Congress, with critics saying it is a step toward a federal takeover of health care and supporters arguing it is essential to create competition with private firms. Proposals for creation of nonprofit cooperative ventures have emerged as an alternative. What that means, co-op. And what is a co-op? Well, this is a nonprofit member-owned group that would assemble networks of healthcare providers and negotiate payment rates with them. The government would provide up to $6 billion. The history of healthcare co-ops is, according to this article, in the United States, very uneven. Many have failed because they're unable to compete effectively. These are member-owned, and they assemble networks of healthcare providers. So as a member, you pay in a amount, but your health care, the health care you receive is apparently cost effective, if not a real bargain. However, it's a far cry from a plan, a nationally sponsored plan, that competes effectively with insurance companies. It's almost an impossibility for this health care plan to get done. First of all, it's almost an impossibility for the healthcare plan to get done because the misinformation has been astounding. The propaganda has been amazing. The ignorance that has been fostered and that has been encouraged has been almost record-breaking. The understanding of what a national plan is by the American people is non-existent. Non-existent. Understand what I just said. Doesn't exist. Now, that's not necessarily bad. Number one, without a national plan, without a national option, that is an option that says here is effective coverage, hospital, dental, doctor's visits, prescription medicine. You may opt for this. And when an insurance company says that's not fair, it may drive me out of business, the insurance company is saying the following thing, and people don't seem to understand this because they've been told, don't worry about this, worry about that. If a private health insurer says this may drive me out of business, he's saying effectively, I can't compete with the price. And I can't compete with the price and the services offered. In other words, maybe I'm not as good as I thought I was. Plain and simple, man. And the thing that makes me laugh is that on the one hand, I got people telling me that what government-sponsored program has ever been effective, and on the other hand, the very same people say they could drive private insurance out of business. Now, you can't have it both ways, folks. You can't say no government-sponsored program has ever been effective or efficient, and on the other hand, say it's so bloody efficient, it's driven an entire industry out of the industry. It's taken all of these private health insurers, and it's wiped them right off the map. That's how damn good it is. But let's remember that no government-sponsored agency or entity has ever been efficient. Now, folks, I might have been born at night, man, but it wasn't last night. It's either one or the other. This is essential. And for people who have not understood exactly what that third rail is, that national health care plan is, you're not going to have much more of a chance to understand it because it has been so bastardized and the definition of it and the perception of it has been so polluted with words like socialism and Marxism, only in America. And, a lot of the things that makes this country great in many ways, may contribute to making this country stupid. One of them is, of course, our reliance upon the individual's liberty as being our belief that the individual's liberty is sacrosanct and paramount. That's a great thing to believe, but it also sort of steers us away from any kind of cooperative effort, in tandem with our government or anybody else for that matter, in trying to enrich the rest of society. And the thinking is this. You've got a lot of poor people laying in the street who can't afford health insurance, or they're hungry, or whatever it could be. Eventually, that brings the caliber and the quality of society down. It affects all of us. It's impossible to separate us, ultimately, from the good fortune or the bad fortune of other people. We either have to pay for it in terms of police services or social services. We see it, we hear it, we smell it. Sometimes we're diseased by it or infected by it. Sometimes we're enriched by it because we're hired by it. We are put into profit sharing by it. You know, the success as well as the failure of others can generate a lot. If you say to me that a successful business hires lots and lots of people, and therefore a successful business is good for society, I would say to you, yes, you're right. So why do those very same people who would suggest that to Phil Hendry would turn around, therefore, and then say this? But someone who fails, a great number of people that are failing, that has no effect on me. That's not my business. It's not anything that I should concern myself with. And ultimately, it'll be taken care of by social Darwinism or something. So they're very happy to tell you that a successful business hiring people can help a community, can build a community, can build businesses, can build families. That's great. But a failing community, a failing business, a failing enterprise, a failing industry, that just means a whole lot of people that are out of work, and that doesn't have any effect. That doesn't cost society. Come on. The public health option in competing with private insurers would help in the minds of people designing this plan help to keep the prices down. That's essential, and that's what it's all about. A public health option that some would say is impossible to run because the government does not run anything efficiently, keeping the prices down and possibly running private insurers out of the business because they've competed effectively and they have provided good service and they have done what they're supposed to do, insure people. Well, that means that's a successful enterprise because they have achieved something. They've achieved market dominance. And the fact is, they're doing the job, right? and everybody's insured, as would be the case, as would be the law in this country. But that very clear distinction has been lost because there has been an attempt at stifling that sort of discussion by ideologues who believe, bottom line, national health, no matter what the form, no matter what you call it, even if it isn't single payer, is bad for the country. They can't tell you why. They cannot tell you why. They can say to you that no government agency has ever been run successfully. Yeah, okay, fine. Well, then you don't have to worry about them running the private insurers out of business. But just in case that argument fails, we've got the one about them running the private insurers out of business. And let's not forget that Medicare and Medicaid suck. So what makes you think a national plan? Well, for starters, it's a national plan. And the idea is to really go toe-to-toe with these private insurers to see exactly who mans up and who doesn't. Who's stepping up to the plate? Who's providing the coverage and the caliber of care? And who isn't? So the bottom line is this. Without a national plan, you're not going to have a national health care bill at all. Forget it. It's not going to get passed. I don't give a crap about co-op this. Forget it. You talk about something that's jury-rigged, man. That's nowhere. It isn't going to happen. If Obama doesn't get this done, he's going to have to find something real fast to hitch his wagon to, because the fact is the president has 4 years, as all presidents do, and he's going to have to get something done. Now, maybe that's the economy in general. Maybe if we have an economy that is healthy and vibrant or on its way at the end of his first term, Obama has got another 4 years, and maybe he will get health care done at the end of 8 years. Right now, though, the biggest mistake he made, and it's very illustrative of what we've been talking about, the national learning curve on national health care hasn't been there. We haven't given the American people enough time to figure out what in the hell people are talking about. All we've done is given a lot of people time to misinterpret and misrepresent as much as they possibly can, and they've done it very, very well. Obama wanted to get this done really fast because he said, my God, we've been dragging our ass on this thing for close to a century. Let's do it. And what he did not recognize, is that we are not at all anywhere near as educated on this concept as any the other people of the industrialized countries of the West, whether it be Canada or anybody else. People get it in those countries. Americans don't. We never have. President Obama made this comment at a town hall this weekend that some say indicates the president retreating on the idea of a national plan.
This is a legitimate debate to have. All I'm saying is, though, that the public option, whether we have it or we don't have it, is not the entirety of health care reform. This is just one sliver of it, one aspect of it. And by the way, it's both the right and the left that have become so fixated on this that they forget everything else.
Here is Health and Human Services the Health and Human Services Secretary telling CNN that the public option, this is Catherine Sebelius, is not essential. Bullcrap.
What we don't know is exactly what the Senate Finance Committee is likely to come up with. They've been more focused on a co-op, not-for-profit co-op as a competitor, as opposed to a straight government-run program. And I think what's important is choice and competition. And I'm convinced at the end of the day the plan will have both of those. But that is not the essential element.
Former DNC Chair Howard Dean says reform is meaningless without a government option. This is a rare time I would agree with old Howard.
You're not going to have real reform without some kind of a public option. That's pretty clear. You really can't do health care reform without it. The health insurance companies have really put enormous pressure on both patients and doctors over the years. What's going on in the health insurance industry is very much like what was going on, in my view, on Wall Street over the last 8 years. People just basically taking money out of your pockets and putting it in there.
Okay, Howard, nice job, man. And then we had the Representative Anthony Weiner of New New York telling CNBC that a bill without a public option is a bill that won't get passed.
The president does seem like he's moving away from the public plan, and if he does, he's not going to pass a bill because there are just too many people in Washington who believe that the public plan was the only way that you effectively bring some downward pressure on prices. And if he says, well, we're not going to have that, then I'm not really quite sure what we're doing here.
So anymore. You would not vote for a bill that made it through if it...
Not only I, but I think there's probably about 100 members of the House who believe for various reasons that you need to have something to bring down prices. Otherwise, you're basically what you're doing is you're keeping the cost arc. The CBO agrees with that. You know, I mean, I think as it was, the public plan had been watered down so much. So if the president thinks he's cutting a deal to get Senate votes, he's probably losing House.
All right, here is Senator Kent Conrad of North Dakota on Fox News with Chris Wallace. He says there's no support for a public option in the Senate.
Would the president be better off just taking the public option off the table right now?
Look, the fact of the matter is there are not the votes in the United States Senate for the public option. There never have been. So to continue to chase that rabbit, I think, is just a wasted effort.
All right, we'll be back with more on this. Your phone calls 877-876-PHIL. Right back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil and you're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. So without that public option, which Obama seemed to indicate this weekend, he may back off of his support for because, well, you just heard one of the audio bites there that we had support in the Senate. Is now they don't have the 60 votes. Harry Reid is the head of the Senate. Harry, you ain't getting it done, man, as usual. Come on, baby. Maybe it's time to go back to Searchlight, brother, and operate a Searchlight, like at the local theater or something. I'm telling you, you know, Obama, you know, you guys think the problem is Obama. It ain't Obama. He's got the biggest pack of stumble bums around him since Hitler. You want to compare Obama to Hitler? It isn't that Obama's Hitler. He's just got the same group of dumbasses around him. He's got these fools, you know, that they can't get anything done. They can't get anything passed. They can't get anything. They can't articulate the point of view. They can't sell it. They got no credibility anyway. Here is Jeff in Scottsdale. Jeff, what's on your mind tonight?
Hi, I'd like to explain why I think we can have it both ways. I think that a private insurer would be governed by the pool of premiums that they collect in terms of what they pay out, whereas a government option would not. So that a government option could actually pay out far more in benefits than they take in premiums, and therefore they're fantastically inefficient, but they've driven the private insurer.
Wait. Slow down so everybody knows what you're talking about. We're talking about a plan, right? A government plan? Or are you talking about the way you'd operate the government plan?
No. I'm talking about why it is that a conservative can say that not only will a government plan be inefficient and ineffective, but it will also drive private industry out of business.
Okay, go ahead.
And my point is that because a private company is governed by the amount of money it takes in when it decides how much to pay out in benefits, and the government is not, they would be free
right.
to pay out.
Well, yes, the far government is. Yes, the government. Yes, the government. Whoa. Yes, the government is. What makes you think they're not? What makes you think the government is not?
Social Security, Medicare, every government program.
I understand that, but we all acknowledge those are broken systems that need to be fixed. We're not putting national health care on the table so we can bust that too.
Oh, but back to my original point, though, this is why the government program could be ineffective and inefficient and still drive a private insurer out of business.
So people are going to go ahead and get health care with the government by the millions, not opt for private insurance. Why?
Because I believe the premiums will be less.
And so the health care will be lousy. They won't get the kind of coverage they get with a health insurer that's private. But it would be so successful in terms of drawing people, they would drive an entire privatized industry out of business. You really believe that?
Solely because it's cheaper. Think of Walmart and how they drive other people out of business just because they're cheaper.
Just because they're cheaper or because they have more to offer?
Take your pick. I guess it depends who they drove out of business.
If you say take your pick, I say that they have far more to offer. And I would also say that Walmart has not driven Kmart out of business. They have not driven Target out of business. There's a lot of companies they haven't driven out of business. They might have driven out of business companies that needed to be driven out of business, but they're far from a monopoly. So we go back to the original point. You're saying that a private insurer would be driven out of business by an ineffective, money-losing insurance plan offered by the government simply because it's cheap, not because the health care is good, not because the options are good, not because it's comprehensive and covers people and they like it for their families and themselves. It's just cheap.
Right. I assume that the health care, the quality of health care is essentially going to be the same. Since you're going to send them to the same hospitals, the same doctors, I mean, you're going to be working
right
with the same pool of professionals. So how much different is
okay
it really going to be?
So why would I want the private company to succeed? Why would I give a crap whether the private guys go out of business?
Because the privatized company is, in the end, going to be more efficient because they're going to have to.
You just said that they're equally efficient. You just said they're equally efficient.
No, I said they're more efficient. And if the government is
innocent. I think you said the government was. All right, we'll be back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You know, the area of the national health plan, obviously, that people are worried about, and the last caller indicated that was his concern, and it's the concern of people, I think, reasonable people who are opposed to it, is the following. What if it starts to require deficit spending to keep it alive? The idea, of course, is that it should not require deficit spending to keep it alive. It should be a deficit zero. It should be a self-sustaining national plan. If it begins to get into the deficit area where you have to fund it, you have to deficit spend to keep this thing going, then you need a Congress with the guts to dismantle it, to get rid of it. Not a Congress that's going to say, well, it's losing money, but, you know, we project that... you got to put some kind of a time limit, I suppose, on this thing so that it is a moneymaker, or at least it's sustaining itself, and it is not something that's going to begin to bleed the government coffers, not that there's anything to bleed out of there, or it's going to require us to start borrowing more money to keep it alive. That's when you get into a problem, okay? But the idea here is that we are talking about people who need insurance to the tune of, what, 40 million, 30 million? Of course, it depends on who you're talking to. The majority of Americans like the plans that they have and would stay with those plans. There is also an exchange being proposed where you could shop for a lower-priced insurance that would be comprehensive, something you could afford, and then you have this national plan. If we're keeping the health insurance that we have, and we're also giving people who have a lower income than the rest of us an option to buy a cheaper insurance, and then we also have, as I say, this sort of, I like to call it a safety net national health plan that would insure people who just simply can't afford the insurance the rest of us can. We're not exactly talking about a lot of people, not as many, I don't think, as 40 million. There are a great many people uninsured in this country who could very well afford insurance. They just don't buy it, or they don't buy it for their children, or they've got other reasons. I mean, you got to figure out first and foremost just exactly who is in that category of people that are just so destitute, they've got to have a national plan. You got to figure out who are the people that could afford it and aren't buying it. You know, there was this idea, you remember last year when they were floating the idea of making it mandatory to insure children, because we know there are Americans who can afford insurance, but they don't afford insurance for their children, but they don't insure their children. So what's the percentage there? And then you, again, take low-income people who may be able to afford insurance and could find some that is reasonable and affordable through some kind of a national brokerage, and then the rest of us who have our insurance are happy with our insurance, and we keep it. The numbers, when they're run, seem to indicate that you've got a national plan that could self-sustain. That's the thinking. But it just doesn't make any sense, doesn't add up, no matter what kind of math you're doing, that a national plan so effective it drives private insurers out of business is a bad thing. It don't add up. It doesn't. I don't care what kind of a Bacchus or slide rule or anything else anybody's using. If something's good, people are using it, and it provides equal coverage, if not better, than a private insurer, then they ain't going to be around, and who needs them, okay? But I'm looking at this scattershot approach to debating and to countering the national health plan, on the one hand saying that it's not going to be effective, no national program can be, on the other hand, it'll be so effective that it's going to drive insurers out of business, even though national insurers are going to be more effective, but they can't compete because people are just strictly going for price. No, they're not. Look at, apparently people don't understand that a national health plan has got to have hospitalization, doctor's visits, medicine, all of the things that a private insurer has. It has to provide these. If it's the same pool of doctors, it's the same pool of doctors. If it's cheaper, it's cheaper. If it's just as good, it's just as good. You guys in the national health insurance, or the private health insurance business, you know full well what it is threatening. It's threatening the profit margin and the, you know, in terms of the premiums that you are able to raise for the money it's costing you for these uninsured people. And then on top of that, the profit that you're taking. This is a good deal all the way around. Driving you out of business. You're a far cry from being driven out of business. The only thing that's going to happen is somebody may come along with a better idea than you. Taking a look at American industry as it is today, I guess that is a pretty big threat, because we ain't had anybody with any ideas, any good ideas around here for a long time. Here is Robert in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Robert, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, how you doing, Phil?
I'm good, thanks.
I enjoy your show very much.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that, you know, even though I agree that, you know, there has to be a change in the healthcare system, I kind of wonder if President Obama has put the cart in front of the horse, because you have hundreds of thousands of people that are losing their jobs on a monthly basis. How are they supposed to pay for any program that's out there? You know, they people don't have the money.
Well, I mean, that's the idea behind a national that's the idea behind a national plan, you know. It's supposed to insure everybody and insure everyone well. And insure them in a way so that it is affordable to society in general. And no matter what your, you know, condition in life, there are some staples that we see as necessary for life, supporting life. And one of them is health care.
So there's going to be, like, people that are collecting unemployment and they're barely being able to make ends meet. There will
right,
be something
right.
there for them to be able to
yes.
afford.
That is correct. That's the idea. And keep in mind that over 10 years, we're already going into the hole on this thing. Over 10 years, $269 billion. So there's a 10-year, we already are looking at 10 years where we know around $25 billion a year will be a part of the deficit, whatever that deficit may be, going to this national plan. Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of 10 years, you can take a look at that and say, okay, what do we got? Do we got anything here, you know? And you can reassess, but we're already looking 10 years out at $25 billion a year deficit spending, because we've got a recession that we're in the middle of, the unemployment that you're talking about, and a national need for health care that's costing us 15-16% GDP every year, that some people seem to think is preferable to some more reasonable approach. But, no. Yeah, you're right. We've got unemployed people. We've got a recession going on, which brings us to the next story that we're going to do. I thank you very much, Robert, for your call, which is that most Americans don't think the stimulus is helping, even though the numbers seem to indicate that that the stimulus is helping to a degree. Now, let's, you know, not get too crazy here. You know, I don't want anybody writing me emails that are like 16 pages long saying, are you kidding me with the stimulus? Everybody knows the government's spending. The fact of the matter is that, yes, the stimulus has worked to hire people. The stimulus has helped to hire people in states across this country. Is the money being used as quickly as it could be used? Probably not. Does this have to do with the politics involved in the individual states where this money is going to? Some of it, yes. The majority of Americans believe the $787 billion stimulus package passed 6 months ago with support from President Barack Obama has had no effect or even made the U.S. economy worse A USA Today Gallup poll released Monday found that 41% of Americans think the spending has made the U.S. economy better. 57% believe it has either made it no difference or worsened. Now, that's an interesting number to just kind of group together, isn't it? They think it's had no difference or made it worse since the recession began in 2007. All right, so if you were to bust those numbers out, you got 41% who think that the spending has made the economy better. You got another percentage that think it's been worse, and you got another percentage that think it's had no effect at all. And I'd be willing to believe that the majority of that 57% probably think it hasn't made any difference whatsoever. They're not willing to say it's made it worse, and they're not willing to say it's made it better, because I don't know that Americans have enough information as to just where this money is going. And the reason for that is, quite simply, it's either not being reported. The elected representatives who ought to know don't. And when I say don't, I mean they don't. Or if they do, they don't want to say. And again, we'll bring you the example there of Boehner there a couple of weeks ago, who said he didn't think that Ohio was benefiting. I don't think that it's Ohio. All you got to do is make a phone call, bonehead, and find out that, yes, it has. As a matter of fact, we haven't gotten a call from any corner of this country, from any caller, who could ask me the question, Phil, has this stimulus affected where I live, where we wouldn't be able to say, you know, yes, it has. There's money going to this state, that state, wherever you live, there's money going to the state. Now, you might want to ask your governor or your elected representatives in that state what they're doing with it. The paper noted, the USA Today Gallup poll paper noted that while economists do not agree on the impact of the package on the economy, most believe the recession would have been worse without the stimulus. These are the economists that they interviewed for this article. But respondents were skeptical about the effects of the massive expenditure on their personal finances. Just 18% saying their fortunes had improved, 68% saying they'd seen no change. That's pretty much where most Americans are with this thing. It isn't that they think it's made things worse. It's that they don't know. All right, so Americans also expressed pessimism about the long-term effect of the package, which combined $288 billion in tax cuts and $499 billion in new spending for a variety of projects, including infrastructure renewal. On the long-term prospects for the U.S. economy, opinion was evenly divided, with 38% saying it would improve the economy, 38% saying it would make things worse. This is a very, very typical poll in times like these. And all it reflects is either a lack of confidence because things suck or a lack of information. It doesn't tell you anything other than the mood of the American people in terms of their patience for things like stimulus spending or even national health care plans. But it doesn't tell you anything about the effectiveness. For the effectiveness, you talk to an economist, you take a look at the numbers, you go state by state and see how much money and where it has been spent on what projects and how many people have been hired. And we know for a fact people are getting... Now, see, people automatically, because they are ideologically locked, I like to say they're ideologically frozen in time. Well, that must mean that you're just in favor of all kinds of federal spending no matter what happens. No, I'm not in favor of all kinds of federal spending no matter what happens. I am in favor of all kinds of federal spending when things are as bad as they are these days. Yeah, I'm in favor of a little bit of that stimuli. I'm in favor of a little bit of an activist hand in the economy when we've got unemployment hitting 10%. Now, the word is that I got that the unemployment is going to hold at the numbers we're at right now, it's around 9.5. The word I got, and this is just between you and me, okay? Don't tell any other talk show host this, and please don't call up Anderson Cooper or any of those people, because then they'll say, oh, look at Phil Hendry, he's running his mouth. The word I got is that the unemployment is going to hold at about 9.5% to the fourth quarter, and it may hold there for another quarter. It's not going to get worse. That in point of fact, you've heard this phrase, we've hit the bottom. I've heard that too, but what I've also heard is that the bottom that we are at, we're going to kind of be stuck at for a couple, three quarters. But that there will not be a 10% unemployment number. Now, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But that is the best information that I've got from a variety of consultants that I have.
You mean those guys you're drinking beer with last night?
And will you shut up?
No, is that what it was?
No, it's no, it wasn't the guy. The guys I was drinking beer with last night.
One of those guys works at a bank.
One of my contacts is with the credit industry. Forget it, man. Guys I was drinking beer with.
Ain't that the guy we're talking to, though?
No, that ain't. Will you guys get out of here and shut up? So that's what I've heard. All right, let's talk about this poll, and then we'll get into the stories that we couldn't, we'll get into the stories that we couldn't get into, okay? CNBC's Eric Burnett says the stimulus has worked to some degree, but the perception, again, is that it hasn't.
Interesting public perception says that the stimulus plan is not working. Economists and investors might be critical of whether the plan could have been structured differently or how quickly it's working. But it is fair to say that in the second quarter of this year, the stimulus plan did contribute to growth, somewhere between 1 and 3%. But it certainly did. The perception issue, though, that you can see in that survey is a significant one, and one that I think the Obama administration no doubt is paying close attention to today.
All right, Aaron Burnett, what did I say? Eric Burke. Anyway, this is economist Dr. Jeffrey Sachs telling Carlos Watson of MSNBC. That's the same Carlos Watson that was in a panic about something the other day. I forget what he was saying, but it was like, I don't know, this guy was in all kind of hurt when he was on the air saying
things are bad.
Anyway, this is Carlos Watson. Stimulus hasn't had any major impact on the economy.
I think that part of the problem is that the economy is dragging, even if it's being...
Oh, he said socialism is the new N-word. That Carlos Watson.
I think that part of the problem is that the economy is dragging, even if it's being given a little bit of a lift.
Yeah,
unemployment's still rising.
Yeah, right.
Everybody seems to have the same view that it's going to rise to more than 10%. Consumers
are feeling
miserable.
No, it ain't.
Growth is basically near zero, whether it's positive or negative.
So I hear you agreeing then, Jeff, with the 57% who say the stimulus hasn't worked.
I don't think the stimulus has done very much.
Hey, Jeff,
probably had a very minor positive effect, but a very small one.
I feel great. I'm not an economist. I'm not a brain surgeon of any kind. And I can tell you he's wrong. It won't hit 10%. It has had some impact, not as much as some people would like it to have. But I'm here on my show, the Phil Hendry Show, where truth is our bitch, where, we know what we're talking about and all that bull crap. And I'm here to tell you...
Things are bad.
No, I'm not here to... I'm here to tell you that it will not hit 10. It'll get close, but it won't hit 10. I'm Susie Orman. Now then, all right, we'll be back with the stories we couldn't get to right after this, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Things are bad. Yeah, I want to say, let me try.
Things are bad.
Get away from the microphone, man.
Things are bad.
Things are bad.
It's nasty.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, time now for the stories we couldn't get to in Brooklyn, New York. Could your cell phone inadvertently turn on your gas oven without you even knowing it? Well, a Brooklyn man claims that his phone does just that and actually caused his kitchen to fill with smoke. According to an original report from New York all-news radio station 1010 Winds, Andre Melnikov, Melnikov, first noticed it last Monday when he claims an incoming phone call caused his gas range's broiler to light up. According to the report, when Melnikov's Sony Ericsson PDA is within about 2 feet of the stove, an incoming call will cause the Maytag Magic Chef stove to beep and the digital display will light up, indicating that the broiler is on high. Open it up and you'll see the gas flames streaming out of the broiler's burners. The owner notified Maytag, which promised to send a repair team to identify the problem. A check of Maytag recalls on the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission's website indicates there are no existing recalls for Maytag gas stoves that describe this particular problem. The Maytag recalls that are related to gas stoves are listed below, and then there's a blank space. Now then, explorers discover giant rat-eating plant, and they name it after a famed scientist. In other news, explorers have discovered a new species of giant rodent-eating carnivorous plant, and they've named it after legendary TV naturalist Sir David Attenborough. Huh? Nepenthes attenboroughi, or whatever, a previously unknown variety of pitcher plant discovered on a remote mountain in the Philippines is so big that small rodents could be trapped inside and slowly dissolved by flesh-eating enzymes. It's thought that only a few hundred of the plants exist, growing only on one mountain on the island of Palawan. The species was discovered by a team of scientists who had heard reports from missionaries who got lost in dense jungle. They went there and found a mummy that was activated by a Tana root. No, they went there. Stuart McPherson, Alistair Robinson, and Volker Heinrich decided to name the plant after Sir David as an expression of gratitude for his decades of work celebrating the national, the natural world, and the fact that he directed Gandhi. Just a Richard Attenborough directed Gandhi.
Wait, I don't understand.
Never mind. He's inspired a generation into protecting the world and developing greater understanding diversity of the planet. Blah, blah, blah. No, I'm kidding. This is a great thing. Nepenthes raja, the only species of pitcher plant bigger than Nepenthes attenboroughi, has been known to digest rodents since the British naturalist Spencer St. John was astonished to discover a drowned rat in a specimen in Borneo in 1862. In Independence, Missouri, police said teens stole two go-karts from Cool Crest overnight and raced them down Interstate 70. Police said the thieves broke a window in a storage shed and stole the carts, which sounded the alarms at the entertainment park. Witnesses reported seeing the go-karts driving down the highway. Some people driving by thought it was odd there were go-karts on the highway, so they called in and reported it. Cool Crest's Kyle Breon told KMBC's Peggy Bright. Police spotted, and then they got married. Police spotted two giant go-karts pulling off Interstate 70 at Manchester Traffic Way, which is about 4 miles away from Cool Crest. The teens tried to run away. Can you imagine these kids in these go-karts trying to outrun a cop? Oh, we're out of time. Okay. World-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Jason Rance. Our technical director, back from vacation, is Ralph Rodriguez. Don't forget, you can visit our website at philhenryshow.com and see our live streaming video of the show as well as live streaming audio. You can hear that, and you can listen to our downloads and see our affiliate list. Great stations across the country. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, we'll see you tonight, tomorrow night, or later on this morning.
Phil Henry.